Welcome to In Moderation,
the show where we give you a moderate dose of info, sarcasm, and we already know we're not approved.
Hey, Liam.
Hi.
Guess what?
Chicken butt.
Yes.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
That's the end of the show. Okay. But you know what? Today is going to be an extra special episode. You want to know why?
Is it, does it have something to do with the guest we have on?
It does have something to do with the guest we have on. Do you know what it is?
No.
We have ex-improv actress Dr. Sarah Ballantyne on the show.
How did you know that?
I know everything.
I don't think I've ever been less surprised by anything, to be perfectly honest with you. That, like, totally tracks.
I was a professional improviser up until the pandemic.
Up until the pandemic? So that shit's recent.
Oh, yeah. No, and my husband and I were on a team together. So it was, like, a, like, shared hobby. Our team was called the Awkward Selfies.
Nice.
The Awkward Selfies?
Yeah.
I feel like it's usually more punny. I feel like the improv things are usually more punny.
I don't know. It was like an inside joke thing, yeah. Right? So my husband, we both were like theater kids in high school.
Yeah.
And then my husband had done some theater in grad school as well. I was too busy doing graduate school to have hobbies like theater.
Nerd.
But he's an astrophysicist. So, you know, they have different kinds
you're both
of schedules.
Nerds. Okay.
And so I was a few years ago, we live in Atlanta and we'd already been here for a few years and like met nobody. Like we had no friends. And
so what does one do but start an improv? How else do you make friends? Honestly.
We started off by going to classes. So we started off by like, and we went on different nights of the week because we like had little kids at the time. So we needed childcare. And then we ended up like a group ended up forming out of his class and they needed one more. And because I had been to all their shows, like because I was the supportive wife, they were like, hey, Sarah, come and join us. And then we performed out of a few different local theaters for like, you know, 25 people. Sometimes we'd have like,
I still crowds, don't know why yeah. We're called the Awkward Selfies though. I'm waiting for the,
okay. So in part because we would always take a selfie awkwardly at the beginning of a show before we had the moniker. And then it became a shtick that we would always take, like we would run out to the audience and take selfies awkwardly with audience members. So it was just one of those. It you had to be there, Liam, is basically
the opening. Okay. I'll accept you had to be there. That's a fine. Okay. All right. Well,
fair
now
warning
I guess we'll
to future guests, don't underestimate what I know.
I am impressed. So if we want to jump into Big Booty, let me know.
Yeah, that's fine. We have Murderer on our, like, if someone's gonna pop on, you're gonna have some deep dark shit for him. But you should probably also introduce yourself and like what people know you for on the social medias and
your current profession.
Yes, my current profession. I would say, I don't know if you guys think of yourselves as science communicators. Do you? Because that's kind of how I think of myself, as a science communicator in health and nutrition topics. Okay. But I also, if in that space, am creating something new, which is called Nutrivore, which is simply the goal of getting all of the nutrients our bodies need from the foods we eat. I think of it as a dietary philosophy rather than a diet, but that has become the guiding principle for all of the content that I create now. And it's kind of like halfway in between diet and anti-diet. So it is an education that helps us improve diet quality, but without labeling any food as good or bad. So it's kind of like,
you'd say that a lot. It's not a diet. I like, it's on your book. It's, you know, like every, your social media. It's not a diet.
There's no food you have to eat. There's no food you have to avoid. Yeah.
Except raw milk.
which is, oh boy.
Okay.
We've gone over that so many times.
Except for foods that can give you tuberculosis.
We don't need to go over the
disclaimer. Just a disclaimer.
Disclaimer. I also maybe don't eat foods you're allergic to. Right. Or foods
maybe
that moldy have gone bad.
I mean, if you're allergic to peanuts and you want to have some peanuts, I'm not going to blame you.
That's fair.
But keep an EpiPen handy.
So I avoided peanuts for a long, long time, for like 12 years. And part of my personal journey in building Nutrivore has been addressing my own disordered eating patterns and kind of like overcoming my own food fears. So I was like happily filming some TikTok in the woods talking about exactly this topic when it occurred to me that I still hadn't tried peanuts. And I was like, why is there this one food that I haven't reintroduced back into my diet?
We've heard some sad stories. That's like the saddest story I've ever heard. It's not eating peanuts for like...
I'm afraid of them, right? I'm afraid that maybe I have an allergy. So I, on a weekend, just in case, I tried a little bit, felt fine, tried a little bit more, felt fine. And I am on the biggest peanut kick. It's been like months now. And I eat them every single day.
Yeah, every
because
day.
They're the best. They're the best nut.
They're versatile. Why? They're cheap. They're nutritious. Yeah. They've got protein, carbs, and
what I heard here was you went out into the woods on a spirit journey. You found your spirit animal in the form of a peanut.
Yes. Yes. This is exactly what happened. A squirrel came and talked to me and said, "What are you doing?" Yeah.
And said, "You should go back to improv."
Did you perchance sample some of the mushrooms out there?
I forage mushrooms all the time, Rob. I am a huge amateur forager. Now, I like to sample edible mushrooms. This is kind of my favorite thing, is the ones that don't roll the dice every time you take. In the woods where I forage, there's Amanita muscaria, which is it's the red one with the white polka dots that is in like all the fairy tale books.
Right.
And Amanita muscaria is a hallucinogenic mushroom, but it also has amatoxin, which destroys your liver. And
that's not good.
It's not good. It also is like a slow, like you have no symptoms, and then your liver failure. So it's a all nasty one.
So the perfect one to put in children's books.
Yeah, right.
Right. Well, okay. So have you ever heard, this is the mushroom that the Santa Claus comes from. So reindeer in Northern Europe would eat these mushrooms, and then their kidneys like process the amatoxin. And so their urine would contain the good stuff that makes you hallucinate, but not the amatoxin. So
do you have to drink it or breathe it? What are we doing here?
Or just eat the yellow snow. And yes. Yeah, so
I would definitely go with snow covered in urine as opposed to drinking it straight. Where are you going? Right.
Growing up in Canada, the first thing you're taught when you're like two months old is don't eat the yellow snow.
But then you don't hallucinate. Snow. And where's the fun in that?
Well, it's only very specifically reindeer post-consuming Amanita muscaria mushrooms. But anyways, you roll the dice. Every time you eat these, every once in a while, there's more amatoxin than hallucinogen.
You
bite it. But this is one of those ones that like college kids will do, apparently. I don't know. It's been a long time since I was last in college.
Well, I know most of your book is about hallucinogenic mushrooms, but what's the rest of it? what's the core theme of not just your book, you know, your social medias, like what are you doing? Because
I would say my overall goal is to make people feel good about the foods that they're already eating that are health promoting foods that they maybe don't realize are health promoting. So like feel good about the foods you already eat that you already enjoy that are already accessible and affordable to you that are actually great for you foods that diet culture has demonized. I would say like, that's my number one goal. And then underneath that is then maybe add a little inspiration to add something else, some new foods that are still accessible and affordable to you and that still, you know, cater to your flavor preferences, but that will like up your nutrient intake even more or fill in a nutritional gap.
What do you think?
And then number three under that is taking walks through the woods.
I see a lot of those videos. What would you say, both of you, but like I say, like you do this a lot. So like, what do you think is like the most demonized, like whole food? What do you like? Because I'm sure you're around this a lot. For me, I feel like it has to be the potato. I don't know. Like, I think because we're so anti-carb, it might be potatoes. I also kind of want to say mango because I see a lot of people like the anti-sugar group, and that's also carbs. So I feel like potato and sugar are up there for me. What do you guys think?
So I mean, I definitely agree. I feel like everybody loves to hate potatoes.
Yes.
I feel like oats nowadays, I feel like everywhere I turn,
oats are now
someone is saying oats are peasant food and oats are full of phytates. And
Dave. Dave Asprey. I'll name names. Fuck that guy. Go ahead.
I also feel like more conventionally, I am on this like iceberg lettuce redemption arc right now. Like, let's all appreciate the lowly iceberg lettuce for its impressive nutritional value. Right. Crunchy water or like nutritional cardboard. Like, there's everyone likes to dunk on iceberg lettuce, but it's actually, when you do the math, it has more nutrients per calorie than celery, and everyone wants to elevate celery to like miracle food status. But iceberg lettuce.
So we should be making iceberg lettuce juice.
Yeah. No, that's not what I said. That's not, I, nope.
What if I blend up a whole iceberg lettuce, like a whole head, and just put it in a glass? That's the new, that I think I could sell that as a trend. I feel like so, I could sell that as a trend.
Have you heard of lactucarium?
No.
Also known as lettuce opium.
Lettuce opium. I like it so far, but no.
Sounds familiar.
So lettuce, all varieties of lettuce have this phytonutrient called lactucarium, and it's actually a little class of different phytonutrients that have analgesic properties. They are mildly sedating, and they have been shown in clinical trials where they isolate it and give it as a supplement. They've been shown to improve sleep quality and architecture.
Right.
And so there is a trend of drinking lettuce water before bed, thinking that that's not in any way going to give you lactucarium for that. But that is where that trend comes from. It comes from, like, there is a real compound in lettuce, but it takes like three heads of lettuce to get enough to have any kind of effect.
Okay. Well, when we do,
I only
when
eat two Rob, and a half, so
that's it.
When Rob and I do our full on arc and we go like full grifter mode, we're going to bring you back on so we can figure out like all the little things like that, you know, so that we know what to like kind of sell. I think that'll be really useful.
You can actually buy lettuce seed extract as a supplement now, and at doses that are similar to what they've used in clinical trials. So I'm sure I could give you some citations of clinical trials with like 30 people to back that one.
Okay, well, I need to get into this topic because I have something here. So you have on Nutrivore, like, it's kind of, right, so correct me if I'm wrong here, but, like, it's a list of the most nutrient-dense foods, and you kind of, like, list them out, you know, the most nutrient-dense foods, lesser nutrient-dense foods. And so, you know, why don't you, maybe, like, what are, like, the top, you know, maybe give us some top 10 nutrient-dense foods.
We're quizzing
like,
you on your own book.
Okay, that's fine. So, The single top most nutrient-dense food is canned clam liquid, which we are not, again, we're not starting a canned clam liquid drinking trend out of this
right
one.
Right now, we're not.
Right.
No.
We'll wait until you're gone, and then we don't have to give you any of the royalties.
But wait, it's just the liquid, or it's the clams as well?
Clams are extremely nutrient-dense, but the liquid has so much dissolved nutrition in it, but it's also, it only has like 5 calories per cup. So in the math, when we calculate nutrient density is defined as nutrients per calorie, which means that you have to divide by the energy density of the food. So a low energy density food does not have to have a ton of nutrients in order to have a really high nutrient density. That's how canned clam liquid gets there. So that one cup serving also has 500% of the daily value of vitamin B12. And then it has some other, you know, other less levels of vitamins and minerals. And it has got some protein in it, kind of similar to like broth, like a few grams. So it's really like that B12, because clams are like one of the most concentrated food sources of B12, that and 5 calories per cup that drive that math up to be so incredibly impressive. It's not objectively a ton of nutrients per serving, but it is the type of thing that if you were like to make linguine with clam sauce or clam chowder or drink clamato juice or us Canadians like Caesars. I don't know. Do Americans drink Caesars?
It always seems like they don't know what we're talking about when you say Caesar.
No.
I don't know. No. Yeah, I'm not sure. I know Little Caesars. Is that nutrient dense?
Apparently Caesars that were invented in a bar in New York. So I don't know why this is such a Canadian cocktail. Anyways, it uses Clamato juice. So that is why I mentioned it. But yeah, like it's a great thing to incorporate. But I don't want us to call it a superfood. But all of the foods in the top 10 kind of fit that same pattern. They're all very low energy density foods. Mm. So garden cress is like the second most nutrient dense.
Because I've always heard watercress is like up there in nutrient density.
Yes, it's like number 7. Like it is way, way up. Garden cress beats it. Garden cress has just higher vitamin and mineral content. Okay. It's also, have you ever tried it? You kind of have to like find it in a farmer's market. It is like watercress and arugula's like angry big sister. Like, so spicy. It is like the, all the like peppery that. Of arugula, like times 100.
I don't like really
the
arugula.
The score on
very
garden
much.
Cress is over 9,000.
Are there, okay, what else? Is there any like drinks maybe in the
coffee? Coffee is like way up there. I know I came with good news. Again, it's like
yeah. I'm flipping through this. I saw coffee was like the top of several different charts in here.
Yes, I always like to leave with the good news. So coffee actually has a little bit of B vitamins. I don't think we know that, but it's also really high in polyphenols, right? Like the chlorogenic acid is a polyphenol, and then it has some cool like caweol and cafestol. I don't know if I'm pronouncing those correctly, so we'll just pretend that I am.
Nobody else knows.
We'll go in and dub it later. That's
fine. These really cool like antioxidants that it has. A little bit of B vitamins. And if you're drinking it black, 1 or 2 calories per cup. So that's also how it gets such impressive math. A lot of leafy greens, right? So like chard, rainbow chard is way up there. Turnip greens, mustard greens, collard greens. Almost everything else in the top 10 list is a leafy.
But Paul Saladino has told me to avoid the greens.
The greens, they've got oxalates and other words.
Do we want to bust oxalates as a myth? Have you dove into this before?
Hold on, before we do that, is there any other drinks like, you know, maybe that's like number 10 in there that maybe like are a little weird that are there on?
Are you going to ask me about Rockstar energy drinks? Is this what you're asking me?
Hold on one second here. I just got to drink my top 10, one of my top 10 most nutrient dense foods. It was getting warm. I had to get to it, so it's not cold when I go. So it's cold when I go to it.
I forget. He you are starting planned. Your day right now. So fascinatingly enough, because it is so incredibly, it's because you're drinking, I'm assuming you're drinking the diet version, so it has almost
no
calories.
Yes, 20 calories per can. Thank you very much.
And so very, very low calorie because it uses artificial sweeteners, but it's also, it's basically a B vitamin supplement with some caffeine. That's basically what energy drinks are. So when you do the math, you end up at a very high score because again, it's like packed full of B vitamins. Caffeine's not in the score, sadly, but packed full of B vitamins for very, very low energy density. So just, you can just think of it as a B vitamin supplement in liquid form.
Is it
tasty? Are you enjoying drinking it?
I have the silver ice variety. I am a bit of a connoisseur when it comes to your
I'm sorry, but their
here.
Lemonade one is tops.
I think this would be vintage 2016, if I'm correct. I could be wrong on that. I'm not sure which vineyard the ice comes from. I'm assuming the ice is just grown and then they harvest it and make it silver and put it into
it's non-GMO silver. Ice as well, right? You got to make sure you've got that.
It depends on the variety. Some, they have to be GMO in order to survive the climate. It depends on where they're grown and the altitude. There's a lot of fancy terms
here.
We
have to make climate change resistant ice.
Yes, exactly right. That's the heart of the issue. But also what I like to think of is that when I go for one of these, I'm going to have one of the top 10 most nutrient-dense foods. And, you know, I'm going to feel better about myself.
I'm so glad that I could make you feel good about a food that you already enjoy.
I'm sure somebody
I'm
right now
stuck over here with my Sprite with children's cough syrup in it.
Oh yeah, what? So it's a flavor of Sprite, but like it tastes like cough syrup apparently.
Yeah, it's new flavor Sprite Chill Cherry Lime, and I'm like, this tastes like Sprite with a splash of cough syrup in it.
Which I love. So, I'm going to be honest. I love NyQuil. It's so good.
Okay, so I'm old enough that when I was a kid, the coughs, and maybe this is a Canadian thing too. Cough syrup was green and tasted vile. Did you have this cough syrup when you were a kid, Rob?
Green, like the Buckley's type stuff.
It was a something.
I don't think.
I'll have to like text my mom and be like, what was that vile green cough syrup we had to have when I was a kid? Yeah, I wouldn't willingly consume that flavor ever. Doesn't matter what it's mixed with.
No, the cherry's where it's at. Like if I was, you know, if I was in, what's it called? Scissorp, I think as they call it, or lean is the other term where basically you mix alcohol with cough syrup. I'm not saying I've ever done that, but I'm saying that the idea of it doesn't sound horrible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's in top 10 most nutrient dense foods, but anyway.
I don't know that I have complete enough nutrition data to be able to calculate a nutrition score.
See scissor on your list, Sarah. I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah. Sadly, I have the same challenge that all nutrient profiling methods have, and that is incomplete data.
Right. Yes. Yes. But I would. Okay. So people have. Here's the thing I found, especially doing TikToks, people have a very short attention span. So yes. I'd love to get into a little bit just like, because you talk about a lot, like you were just saying earlier, how people already are, help them feel better about the foods they're already eating, but also like introduce maybe some other foods. So like, I don't know, I'd love to get your take on some of like your favorite foods, the foods you talk a lot, you know, that are higher up on the nutrient density score that people mm-hmm. maybe don't realize. And then just like, you know, a few that like, hey, when I talk about this, people really like that. Like, you know, what are some little things we all can do here?
We all enjoy. So I think probably the three foods that I talk about the most often are like just vegetables in general. I don't think that's a surprise, right?
Wait, no. Vegetables are good?
Right, vegetables are good. They're nutrient dense. Wait, I didn't.
But they have sugar.
There's some carnivores out there that probably disagree. That
is, there is certainly some people who demonize vegetables. But I think that the reason why I talk about that is because the average American consumption is about 1.6 servings per day. And scientific studies show that our benefits are maximized at somewhere between 3 and 5 servings per day.
Okay.
So there's like a lot of room for improvement in terms of how much. 1.6
is higher than I thought, if I'm being perfectly honest, but go ahead.
Well, I am single-handedly bringing up that average. So me and my like 14 servings per day are definitely.
Wait. Was that the Canadian average or the American average?
Yeah, it was Celsius. and kilometers.
I want freedom units here, please. Thank you very much. Okay. Go ahead.
And then the other one I talk about a lot is fruit. But I mean, I think there is a lot of fear about fruit. A lot
Can
of
you
people,
dispel some of that and tell people they're dumb? Bananas. I mean, I'll tell people they're dumb, but you go ahead and give the reasons.
I would say it is normal to be afraid of fruit because there's a lot of mixed messages coming from diet culture that make you think that the sugar in fruit is going to be equally as bad as the sugar in soda or candy. And the science shows that it's absolutely not true, that there's some health outcomes for which fruit actually has a bigger impact than vegetables or whole grains or legumes, especially things like colon cancer. But also fruit's really good for metabolic health in general. So cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes. And studies show that eating 2 or 3 servings of fruit per day is vastly superior for our overall health and long-term health than eating none.
What is a serving? Can you just give people real quick, like, what's a serving?
A serving is 1 cup measured chopped, which translates to a fruit about the size of your fist. Okay. I actually really like the fist because I have teeny tiny, I have really small hands, but I'm also not the tallest of people. I love the fist as a visual approximation because it actually builds in scale, right? So like if you're a bigger person, on average, you're going to have bigger hands. There's obviously a lot of variability. You might be able to fit your whole hand in your mouth. So that means a serving of fruit for you, Rob, is one bite.
Mm-hmm. One massive, huge mm-hmm. bite. Mm-hmm.
So I like that because you can basically scale down for kids that way. Just think of a serving as being okay. about the size of their fist. Or you can scale up for a 6.5 foot tall person. Like yeah. I maybe know of one or two, or for someone like me, it scales very well.
And so 2 to 3 of those a day is where we see kind of the most benefit.
That's the like sweet spot. So some studies show that above 3 servings per day, like if you look at all cause mortality or cardiovascular disease risk, you kind of see it level out. So you just go okay. no additional benefit above. Okay. There are a couple of studies that start to show like a loss of benefit above 3 servings per day. So it's like not, so you see more of like a U-shaped dose response where you have like that sweet spot Goldilocks
zone. Is that because
zone.
You're excluding other things that could be healthy by adding like more fruit?
Almost
like
certainly.
Yeah, you're right. getting the benefit yeah. from the yeah. fruit, but you could be getting more benefit from vegetables or legumes or whatever else.
There is a little bit of research with fruit when your fructose intakes gets to like 100 grams per day, showing that that can have some metabolic okay. Harm as well. So there is also the like excess fructose.
So you don't recommend fruitarian diets? Or is it just basically only fruit?
I would say the science would support a more diverse diet than that yes. as being optimal for
nice,
health.
That's the nice answer. That's the Canadian answer right there. Liam, give him the American answer.
The American answer is don't do that stupid shit. I'm sorry. Any super restrictive diet, I'm fully against. I don't care if it's fruitarian or carnivore. Okay, so yeah. So, you know, I kind of wanted to talk about one thing, too. I know I'm just jumping to shit. Like, please, you know, yeah. you can always just jump in.
You put me like, on the spot. Do it.
I remember, so, like, I always like the University of Michigan. Sorry, my wife just got home. My dogs are freaking out. And the University of Michigan did a study where they looked at like 4,800 foods and they're like how many minutes they take away or add to your life, which I just yeah. thought was like an interest because that's just something people can be like, okay, I don't really understand food, but I know minutes and I know life.
I read this study because of your first TikTok audit. So yeah. yes, I know exactly what study you're talking about.
I just found it interesting. But like of all the food groups, I thought it was interesting. The time that the most time added to your life, according to them, was nuts and seeds. Which I thought was kind of interesting because I would always assume it was like vegetables, which vegetables obviously good, I'm you know, but it seemed like more time was added through nuts and seeds and even like fatty fish. What are your thoughts? What do you got? What do you think?
So I don't think this is contrary to other science. So what they did was really interesting was they kind of converted a decrease in all cause mortality to an extra minutes of okay. life. Gotcha. But there are lots of studies that measure this just by looking at reductions in all-cause mortality. So just a general indicator of health and longevity, we're kind of capturing a whole pile of different health possibilities as well as just like lifespan in that measurement. And so vegetables tend to reduce all-cause mortality by like 20 to 25% sort of maximally. So if you're eating that 3 to 5 servings, that's kind of like the amount of benefit you can expect. And an ounce of nuts, seeds, and peanuts will reduce all-cause mortality more in that like 30 to 40%
okay.
range. So I think there's some things that nuts and seeds give us nutritionally that we really are not. Like vitamin E is one of the most common nutrient shortfalls.
Okay.
And as a fat-soluble antioxidant, like it's kind of special. Whereas a lot of water-soluble antioxidants, right, like vitamin C, but also like polyphenols can kind of make up for each other. Whereas we don't really have a lot of fat-soluble antioxidants in our bodies. So vitamin E doesn't have as many other nutrients that can like make up the difference functionally for us. So I think a large part of it is vitamin E. The fiber in nuts and seeds yeah. has been shown to grow really important probiotic species of bacteria in our gut microbiomes in a lot of different studies.
Interesting.
So I think there's definitely a gut microbiome aspect there. And then heart-healthy fats, right? So I think, right, nuts and seeds tend to be high in oleic acid, but as well as alpha-linolenic acid and linoleic acid. So all fats that we know improve cardiovascular disease risk. So I think it's kind of that combination of nutrients that we're not necessarily getting from other places. What's fascinating, though, is the benefits of nuts and seeds caps out at about an ounce per day. Whereas with vegetables,
so you're saying my half jar of peanut butter is
equivalent to health-wise as 2 tablespoons.
Damn.
Once you hit 2 tablespoons, any extra is not actually
still. It's an excuse to have 2 tablespoons of peanut butter every day.
Exactly. It would benefit your health. It would be vastly superior to no peanut butter.
And can you tell people like, hey, listen, buddy out there, Todd, we know that peanuts are a legume, but like we classify things with
Okay. I have a soapbox I need to get on right now.
Yes, please.
Okay. So there are botanical definitions, which is fascinating. Botany is a great, thank you, Charles Darwin. We understand botany. It's fascinating. It tells us something about the evolution of the thing. It's great. Botany is a full legit science. It is not nutritional sciences. Nutritional sciences categorizes foods based on their nutrient profiles, based on the types of nutrients they contain. So we group foods together based on their nutrition. So banana is a tropical fruit. Strawberries are a berry. So we are going to categorize tomatoes are a vegetable.
They are a vegetable.
Cucumbers are a vegetable and peanuts are a
squash,
nut.
Pumpkin.
And this all has to do with grouping foods together based on the nutrients they contain because it's nutritional sciences and we want to understand the nutrient contribution that foods make to our bodies.
Thank you.
Not the flower part that grew to the thing.
I love see that. When people use the botanical definitions I just start throwing it at them that, well, you guess you better stop calling strawberries a berry, and I guess you better start calling cucumbers a berry.
Right. Or pumpkin. Pumpkin is a berry.
A berry. Pumpkin's squash.
Yep.
It drives me so crazy when people do like this. I do like, sneaky veggies, and like half of those are fruits. Like, shut the hell up.
My most viral video was about tomatoes being a vegetable and not a fruit.
And people get pit. Why? Why are you all so angry? It's like, okay, I'm not getting into it. We got shit to get to.
I know why. People like to be right on the internet.
I think you're right. People,
I like to be right
people
on
like
the internet.
People like to show that they're better than you on
the internet. I think that's just what it is. And being technically right is the best part of being right.
Right.
Like, you know, like I want to be technically right.
And I think some people just like to do the
excuse me. I can't tell you how many times I've started to type a comment, well, actually, and then been like, no, don't do that. Back up. And then instead find some other constructive way to add.
Okay. But getting back to it here, though, I want to know, like, what are some, like, common foods that you can see at the store that you can add into your diet? Maybe you have some more affordable options. Maybe just there's some options that just are more common that people just might not think about. They're like, I could add that to my diet, and that would be a net benefit for me.
So, let's just stick with the most affordable stuff, because I think that's accessible for everyone.
Yes.
Frozen, mixed vegetables.
Yes.
Frozen mixed vegetables, you can throw them into anything or you can just steam them. Some of them, like, you can throw the whole bag in the microwave and cook them way. And not only does that give you more vegetables, you can get some that are pre-seasoned with different sauces, right? Get them that are going to taste good. So not only is that going to help you eat more vegetables, but it's also going to help you eat a wider variety of vegetables, which is kind of separately beneficial compared to just eating enough vegetables.
Right. Because I think a lot of people get caught up in like, what's the best food or the most like kind of nutrient dense food, which I get, like, it's totally interesting and fascinating. You made a whole thing about it. That's cool. But like, I think you agree, right? That like diversity is kind of the key here and just getting different sources. So like the mixed vegetables, that's
and
why
in Canada, especially affordability.
Yeah.
Where $100 will get your grocery bag about this big.
Whenever I make a video, everybody's like, in Canada, that'll be $10,000. I'm like, it was a jar of peanut butter.
Every time I go home to visit family and I go to the grocery store, I'm like, have sticker shock. When we moved to America, we definitely, in terms of our grocery bills, made an upgrade for sure. And I grew up on Vancouver Island. So we had like island effect prices on top of Canadian prices.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is Liam's like island effect. What it's because there's no bridge. Right. So all the stuff has to come over on a boat.
And what's an island that's surrounded by lava, right?
Yes. Correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Yeah, that was it.
Except in Canada, we call lava ice.
So everything's backwards.
And you can only cross it by jumping from couch cushion to couch cushion.
Don't touch the lava. Okay. But what are some other things that people can add to their diet? That's
canned
all like
canned fish. Canned fish.
Canned fish. Mm-hmm. But tuna has all the mercury in it. I'm going to die.
It does not. So the selenium health benefit value of mercury is about 20, which means that it has roughly 20 times more selenium than mercury. So that selenium binds to the mercury in the tuna and prevents it from being absorbed into your body. And also because mercury binds irreversibly to selenium, and the way mercury hurts us is by binding with selenium-based proteins in our body, it's already bound. Can't, even if it is absorbed. Can't do anything. I'm literally pointing to my head. It's because we have like 25 different selenoenzymes in our brain that protect our brain from oxidative damage. That's why mercury poisoning causes so many neurological symptoms. But I felt like I needed to explain why I'm pointing to my head when I'm talking about tuna fish.
For all those listening, she was pointing to her head.
If you didn't catch that. So I think people like, we always hear like salmon and like fattier fish, which like obviously, yeah, those are great. I'm not knocking those. But I think people kind of poo-poo your salmons, your tilapias, like, you know, like those other fish that they're just like, oh, they're just protein and that's it or something like
that. People poo-pooing my fish.
Yeah.
So it's really, so I mean, the fatty fish are great because they have those long chain omega-3 fatty acids, eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid, which are the omega-3s that have all the benefits to cardiovascular health, immune health, and neurological health. They reduce risk of Alzheimer's disease and heart disease and all kinds of good stuff. So yeah, I mean, fatty fish are great, but there have been studies that look at whitefish specifically and show that they're basically equally as beneficial for cardiovascular outcomes, for cognitive outcomes, and for all-cause mortality. And that's, even whitefish still has some omega-3s, right? Like it's, it doesn't have as much, but it still is providing those healthy fats. Even tilapia has those healthy fats, but also it's the quality of the protein. So there have been some studies, granted they're like human gut models rather than actual humans. But when they compare different protein sources and how that impacts the gut microbiome, to get us back to gut bacteria, because that's one of my favorite side tangents to go on, actually really beneficial for increasing microbial diversity in the gut and growth of keystone species. So, and fish is typically even your like most boring white fish, your tilapia is going to be 2 to 3 times more nutrient dense than chicken or pork or beef.
Really?
So it's also going to have a lot more vitamins and minerals in addition to protein.
See, I grew up on a lot of white fish. So people, if you want to grow up like me, which I know you do, dig into your white fish, your fish and chips, and your fish and poutine.
And people always, and we talk about poo-poo fish, I always see like people like, don't eat tilapia. They just eat shit. Like that's like they eat just horrible food, or you know, they just give them whatever, and that's why you shouldn't eat them.
And then they'll turn around and eat pork.
Right, that's fair.
I mean, obviously, just like everything in our food system, there's different, there's regulations that maintain a certain baseline quality standard, and then different manufacturers are going to exceed that standard in different ways. So obviously there's going to be tilapia that is a bare minimum of whatever meets the regulations. But when fish are grown into dirty of water, they don't survive. Has anyone tried to keep fish alive in a fish tank? It is extremely challenging.
This is fair. This is a good point.
You spend a lot of time at the pet store replacing fish before the kids come home from school.
Yep.
So just scale that to aquaculture and have an understanding for, like, it's actually quite a sophisticated science to grow fish for
humans. And not just that, but when things eat something, they break it down just the same we do, and it becomes the base components. You're not eating the garbage in the fish. You're eating the components that got broken down into.
I hear that a lot from like the keto carnivore side. Like you eat what your food ate. Like they always say that a lot. And I'm like, I mean, I guess I can kind of see the connections, but I'm not so sure that tracks like a one for one there.
I mean, I see the argument for something like grass-fed beef, where there like right. is a little bit more nutrition in right. the meat than grain-fed, and that has to do with they're getting more nutrition from grass than they're getting right. from corn or whatever. But I think that's taking like you are what you eat, first of all, far too literally, and then right. also turning yeah. it into a chain of events that doesn't quite follow.
It seems to make it confusing on purpose so that you can then like kind of get them to follow, like, oh, so I got to follow you to find out what I should eat. It kind of feels more like. But before we
so
move on.
So you're saying I should be more confusing in my content, and that is how I will.
That's how you get more of a following yep. for sure. But before we move on to fish, the thing I always see, like, even it's just like, I work at a hospital, and when I say I go to school for nutrition, I talk about things. They're always like, I only ever buy wild caught. I never get the farm raised stuff because that's garbage. Like, I've heard that multiple times. Can you give us like a little bit on just like tell people it's maybe okay to get like farm raised salmon?
It's absolutely fine. There's actually been a couple of studies where they give people farm raised salmon and then have them do like different types of cognitive tests after, like before or after.
Really?
Or they do a pre serum cholesterol panel and like post serum cholesterol panel and show that eating like farm raised salmon a couple times a week improves health outcomes. So they've actually done this in clinical trials. So we know farm raised salmon does improve health. But if we just look at it nutritionally, there's a little bit more nutrition in wild caught for sure. But farmed is still incredibly nutrient dense. Like it's depending yep. on the type of fish, the differences can be anywhere between zero, like catfish is like identical between farmed and wild to I think some of the types of salmon are like 50-60% higher in wild versus farmed. But your baseline number, your like farmed right. salmon, your the thing you're comparing it against is already now like four times higher than chicken breast, right? So like we're comparing awesome to awesomer.
Awesomer.
I should have started with a different word.
No, I like awesomer. Comparing... I prefer awesomer. We go with
okay.
that.
Awesomer to awesomest. So all of the myths that are out there about farmed salmon are very easily disproved by knowing anything about how they're raised. There's mandatory withdrawal periods for the antibiotics that are used so that there is no residue measurable in the meat. And different antibiotics have different mandatory withdrawal periods. And in North America and Europe, we don't like, we've got so much like supervision over that industry that there haven't been cases of people breaking those regulations for a very, very long time. I think the other myth about farmed fish is that the food color added, the astaxanthin that's added yeah. to the feed. It is the exact same. It's usually even added to the feed in the form of red algae. It's usually not even isolated astaxanthin that's added to their feed. It is the exact same thing that wild salmon are getting in their diet, like biomagnified.
Yeah, to isolate it would be just an extra process that they have to pay for.
And the whole reason why farmed salmon isn't quite the same vibrant pink is because it's an extremely expensive ingredient. So they're adding as much as they need to make it appealing enough for us to buy it, but not as much as what would be like make it the same color as wild, because it doesn't change what we're willing to buy or how much we're willing to pay for it for how much more money it costs them in the feed. So that's just economics.
And then with the, I have one more is the sea lice and the parasites and stuff in the farmed salmon. And the people who complain about that have never gone fishing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because as a fisherman,
I'll let you two talk over each other. I'm just going to sit over here and drink my rock.
We'll talk over each other. Liam will have a drink. You know, as a fisherman, I can tell you, I pulled out a lot of fish that have had worms and other things in them. Like, it's way more common in wild fish where they aren't treated.
Yes. So I was going to say the same thing because I also grew up fishing. I grew up really poor. So we like fished and foraged for like,
that's just Canada for you, right?
But also, yes, that's what happens when you grow up in Canada on an island yeah. where you have island effect prices for groceries. Yeah, but
lava is terrible. Go ahead.
It's so much lava. so, So I was going to say there have been some fisheries, like the fisheries in Scotland have had a few different sea lice outbreaks that have made the news. That's where like those really disturbing pictures come from on the internet. And right. like they have had this challenge like recurring. And there is when you have those outbreaks in fish farms, you have the potential for extra spillover into the wild population. So like that is a challenge. And like absolutely that needs to be fixed. And I think we can't judge an entire industry based on an unusual situation in one area of the world that people are trying to solve. But I think that is being used as the photography to support this myth that's being spread that like all fish farms everywhere are infested with sea lice, and that's why they're pouring chemicals into the water.
It always seems the more affordable option gets demonized. When are we going to get to the point where like caviar is terrible for you because it's got like a bunch of shit in it or something like that? Can we get to that?
Wait, no, that's already happened. I'm sorry, Liam, you missed 2016 caviar gate.
I want like foie gras or whatever to get like demonized and not like my beans and oats.
Foie gras has been demonized. It's been made illegal most of the world.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know fancy shit. Okay. Listen, I don't know anything about anything that costs over $5 per
foie gras. So the way foie gras was traditionally made was they force fed ducks and goose to the point where they had like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That's why their livers had so much fat content. And so it was like animal cruelty. So it's been made illegal.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, there's only a couple countries left that can do it.
Interesting. Well, see, now I feel better. Yeah, I like when the fancy stuff gets fucking taken down. Fuck you, rich people. Anyway.
You're right, though, that I think this is a big challenge in like diet culture, wellness community, is the bar is constantly being raised as to what you have to do to be like following the rules of being healthy. And it's always like the next more expensive thing,
always
the next more expensive thing. Now it's the $300 a month supplement on top of your next more expensive thing.
The $3,000 special bamboo mattress.
Oh, the match. Oh, God, the whole, it's so ridiculous.
Wait, so is it comfortable? I'm just asking for a friend.
How would I know? I'm not going to pay $3,000 for a mattress.
I'm just wondering if I could sell out and get one for free.
Probably.
Tell them that Bobby sent you.
Gosh. That would work.
That would work.
Okay. Enough with the rich people. What else? Okay, I want to get to my legumes. I want my legumes to be on there.
Okay, sorry. The next one after frozen mixed vegetables and canned fish is dried beans. I mean, canned beans are fine too, but dried beans are way cheaper, which is why we're focusing on dried beans. They just take a little bit of forethought.
Yeah.
Because you have to put them in some water to soak before you cook them. I mean, you can do the rapid cook, but the rapid cook's not even that rapid, right?
Yeah.
I think if you don't want to just soak them.
A ton of lectins and whatever. Because that's always, I always found that interesting. They demonize beans because of lectins, but that's like just like, yeah, don't eat raw beans.
But if you properly prepare the beans, you basically reduce the lectins by 95 to 100%, depending on the bean.
Okay.
Yes.
Does it matter? So, like any beans? Like it does, like it pretty much any of them? It doesn't matter?
Any beans. So like any, like kidney beans, pinto beans, black beans, chickpeas, lentils, they all are our densest sources of fiber. So they're the most fiber, like per amount of food that you're going to get.
And we're talking about gut health. I know fiber, gut health, good.
Yes.
Fiber.
Check. Pro column. But also, so legumes are the most nutrient dense starchy foods. So of any sort of like slow burning starches, if you're going to compare that to whole grains, or you're going to compare that to root vegetables, on average, legumes win by a factor of 2 or 3, especially over whole grains. Whole grains are really generally pretty underwhelming nutritionally. And just in terms of like vitamins and minerals, they obviously are still beneficial. They've still got really good fiber. But compared to a legume, like legumes are always going to beat out just about any whole grain in terms of vitamins, minerals, and antioxidant polyphenols. Going to be very high in legumes. And to go back to the gut microbiome, so much science showing benefits of legumes. Like so much.
Legumes are so underrated.
They're so under. I just love them so much.
I feel like you either grew up with legumes as a like cultural food and it's one of your staples, or you have no idea how to eat them or make them.
Or you have never eaten fiber and you try them once and they give you that super
and
gas.
And then the limerick becomes the truth.
Yeah.
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 Going 0 to 100 in fiber, man, that is a lot to... Fiber is definitely an ease up slowly nutrient for sure.
We talk about that a lot.
Yeah.
So much. Wait, Liam, did you say you eat 100 grams of fiber per day?
I can easily eat 1 to 150 for sure. Not every day. I wouldn't say it's like every day, but like when I get my like five fiber wraps or stuff, or I have chia seed pudding in the morning with berries, and then I have my bean, like, you know, super chili. I make a lot of chilies. Like potatoes as well.
I feel really proud of hitting 50 regularly. Like, I feel like I'm
Well, I also eat 3,500 calories a day, so it's a lot easier.
I'm eating the same percentage of my diet.
Right, exactly. Percentage-wise, it's probably about the same.
Yeah.
My dietary intake's usually around 70.
Dietary fiber.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah. You gotta get there slowly. Like I always say, like add a few berries, add a few, like, you know, these little things. Oh, okay. Yeah. So then you were talking about whole grains though, and they're a little underwhelming. So like, can you give us a little deal on just like whole grains, like how, what to shoot for, what we're looking at? Like, I think there's a little confusion because people like carbs, bad whole grains versus refined grains, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know.
So the way I kind of think of grains, root vegetables, and legumes as like the starchy food group. Okay. So they're all going to give us slow burning starches. And I think they're pretty interchangeable within those. So I'm not so convinced by the science on whole grains to kind of think like these are a must food, but they're definitely a beneficial food and they're definitely great budget stretching food. So I'm like not anti-grain, but I'm not like whole grain, rah, rah, rah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You don't need to set aside, but like, I need to get these into my diet.
Yeah. So I feel like if you're getting legumes and root vegetables, as you're getting those fiber dense, slow burning starchy foods, still slow burning carbohydrate, right? The starchy foods. I think those are pretty interchangeable with grains. I think grains are great because they're cheap. They're cheap. Obviously whole grains are the ones that are associated with health benefit, and refined grains, not
so much. Is there any, like specific whole grains, like maybe oats or barley over whatever, or just kind of just doesn't matter too much?
Oats and barley, are like the special ones because they have a type of fiber called beta glucan, which is the type of soluble fiber that has been so strongly associated with reduced cardiovascular disease risk, like not just lowering cholesterol, but actually translating to lower cardiovascular disease incidence. And also that's the type of fiber that has been shown to improve blood sugar regulation. So people have shown that if you add oat fiber to a meal, that it blunts the blood sugar response to that meal. So oats kind of like for sure, all of the benefits of oats that you've heard from your cardiologist are true.
Okay. But so what about all the negative things from the shirtless guy in the grocery store?
Those are not true.
But the shirtless guy is shirtless in a grocery store. How can you be lying to me?
But I've heard phytic acid and, glyphosate.
Did you know that phytic acid is nearly chemically identical to myo-inositol, which you can get as a supplement for improving blood sugar regulation? And that there have been some studies where they actually give people phytic acid as a supplement and show that it increases markers of bone mineralization, so potentially could be therapeutic for osteoporosis, that it has been shown to – I think it was – oh gosh, I'm trying to remember. I think it was type 2 diabetes, but I'm trying to remember exactly what the study was. Like, there have been studies where they give people phytic acid as a supplement. So
you need to send me that. I need to do that.
I will send you. Yeah. So there have been a couple of clinical trials where they like give people phytic acid as a supplement and show that it's good. It is. So whatever the monomer is that myo-inositol and phytic acid are based on, myo-inositol is 5 of them as a polymer and phytic acid is 6. So that, like, it's just got one extra of whatever that base molecule is. Yeah. So no, I think phytic acid is actually beneficial for us. So, yes. Yeah.
Get your oats. I hate the demonization of oats. It's been just really annoying me anyway. Before, so I want to make sure before we get to like the end of it, because now we're going to get on to like an hour here. I want some fun facts. I like all your little fun facts. Okay. And so the one I remember that I want to bring up because I remember it and I like it was that, like the polyphenols that are like found in berries can maybe help reduce like delayed onset muscle soreness. Like, yes. I remember that one. I like that. I like that as a fun fact.
Also, the betalains in beets and rainbow chard can do the same thing and have actually been shown. They've done studies where they give people like beetroot juice. It's usually like the equivalent of like one serving a day for a couple weeks. And then they'll have them do something like run a marathon. And okay. Then they'll come back the next day for like a recovery workout. And so their recovery workout, they'll have like lower markers of muscle damage, but then they'll like run their recovery 5K faster. So they have like way better muscle recovery afterwards. So beets also do the same thing. Anthocyanins, it seems to be like a pain killing in addition to antioxidants. Betalain seems to be more like anti-inflammatory. So different. So both. So I would just say like beets and berries in a smoothie. Have you ever tried that together? They're quite good. They're a nice combination. They work together.
It'd be a fun color, at least.
Yeah, it is. The flavors meld. Like I feel like the flavors go together. So betalain's also super super good for muscle repair. Other fun ones. I'm just gonna bring this because this is my favorite one. Is
yeah. That's what I want. I want the good fun ones. Yes.
So you want calcium. We all know calcium for bones, right? Like calcium, electrolyte.
Calcium, bones and teeth. Right. Yep. Yes.
Did you know that calcium intake is like almost exactly correlated with the severity of PMS symptoms? And people who menstruate, who eat more calcium, have a much lower chance of having PMS.
Well, Liam doesn't woman, so...
I don't.
He definitely do know that.
But, as of but currently. Presumably shall be at some point relevant in your life. You shall be supporting child.
I shall be supporting. I shall be supporting child.
Did you for a split second you forgot you had a child, didn't you?
No, I just like the way she phrased it. I'm going to phrase it that from now. I shall be supporting child. Yeah. Okay. So So what are calcium sources in foods? Leafy greens.
Yes. Yeah, so actually yogurt. Leafy greens and cruciferous vegetables, dairy products, canned fish with the bones, like sardines and canned salmon.
Oh, because you need the bones. So the bones of my enemies are giving me calcium?
Yes. Yes, they are. Why do you think I have the axe, Liam?
This is where the man versus bear conversation really needs to go.
Okay, I like that. Okay, so calcium. Berries, polyphenols, anthocyanins, all that stuff. What else?
So there is some research to show that B vitamins not getting enough as we age dramatically speeds up age-related cognitive decline. And it looks like it's not necessarily directly tied to dietary intake. Apparently we don't absorb it as well. So we actually need more as we get older.
Oh, so you should be drinking more Rockstar energy drinks.
Does there B12 in there? What?
There's 100% of the value of B12.
There you go. So that'll do.
That'll do, pig. That'll do. I don't know what form. Is there anything like people always talk about the form?
Probably
of, like,
cyanocobalamin.
Cyanocobalamin. Is that like less absorbable? Like what's I know like
it has to be like so the methylcobalamin that's in like the fancy B vitamins is like already the active form. So the methylated form is the active form. So that's and for people who have like gene variants of MTHFR that slightly reduce methylation. Taking the active, like the methylated forms of B vitamins can lead to a better like symptom improvement. So better energy and stuff like that compared to the non-active forms.
I like it. Is that what you got? Anything else? Anything else? I like the fun facts.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of fun ones that aren't female anatomy specific.
I obviously
have a different things that resonate with me. So Well, so protein as we age. So yes. Sarcopenia yes. sucks. It's terrible. Did you know that females lose an average of 10% of their muscle just in the perimenopausal period? You probably didn't know this because this is not relevant to you at all. Slightly relevant to me. I don't like it. So sarcopenia like just accelerates during that transition between times where your body could make a baby and times where your body can't.
So protein resistance training,
so fascinatingly, the like 1.6 grams per kilogram body weight per day, like that we see being so beneficial for athletes, that number gets to be really beneficial again for menopausal females and males over the age of 60.
Whoa. You used kilograms there. You're going to have to dumb it down for Leo.
I heard the kilograms. I was waiting for the freedom units transition, but that's fine.
What is... I have,
so it's 2.2 kilograms per freedom unit.
2.2 pounds per...
Sorry, 2.2
freedom units.
2.2 freedom units per kilogram, yes.
Okay, so 0.73... Because that's so much better.
I always say, I just say like round to like 0.7 grams per pound of
pound
for freedom unit. Damn it.
Yeah, it's actually 0.7. It's actually 0.72
repeating. 0.72
repeating
freedom unit per.
Yeah.
Per grams per freedom unit.
So I'm so glad. I'm so glad we converted. Yeah. Okay, another fun one. So did you know that on any given day, 16% of the world have a headache?
That sucks.
And that magnesium, like insufficient dietary magnesium, could be a key driver.
Something we're falling short on as well, right? Magnesium intake.
Yeah. Sure. It's like 66% of us don't get enough dietary magnesium. Okay. And that's not even accounting for things like how stress can increase magnesium excretion. So it might actually increase our dietary need for magnesium.
Okay. Interesting.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble.
Stress tends to like send the kidneys on overdrive. So we tend to lose electrolytes when we're stressed. And then we also, we burn through vitamin C really quickly when we're stressed.
So what I would say, vitamin C is calm down and eat beans. That's my takeaway from that. Just calm down and relax.
Calm down, chew your food, and eat your beans.
I know pumpkin seeds, super high in magnesium. I know. Yeah.
Everything that's green, because magnesium is the middle of a chlorophyll. So if it's green, it's going to have magnesium. Green foods in general. Interesting. Because chlorophyll and hemoglobin have pretty much the same structure, but chlorophyll has magnesium at the center and hemoglobin has iron at the center.
Okay. Oh, and can you give us some backups? Oh, shoot. Before you go, give you some backups on the greens powders, because we're always like against them and we need your help.
Oh, okay. So here's my thing with the greens powders. I feel like for some people, they can be a really great tool for increasing vegetable consumption, but there's nothing magical about them. And the thing that's really deceiving about how they're marketed is if you actually do the calculation for the fresh equivalent, most of those greens powder supplements, a scoop or two scoops or whatever it is that they say you need, will translate to a half to maybe one serving of fresh vegetables.
Wow.
So there's some like where the serving's bigger, where it might be two servings, but it's not like... There's this idea that if you have that scoop of greens powders, it's meeting your like fruit and vegetable.
Yeah, I always see that. Like the one scoop is like 8,000 vegetables or something like crazy.
It's falling so far short. So like the fresh equivalent is actually really underwhelming. And they're also typically 3 to 10 times more expensive than it would be to go buy the fresh fruits and vegetables. Yes. But I do see that there is like a person who that can be a really useful tool for. And I wouldn't want to...
Right.
Demonize it for that person. I just think that the way they're marketed as like the be all and end all of nutrition is very deceiving.
Okay. Good.
Sounds good to me. Now, where can everyone find you? So they can go complain about your views on greens powder.
Greens powders and tomatoes are fruit and all that stuff.
Come yell at me about tomatoes being a fruit. I would enjoy that conversation. I am at Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, almost all the social media places, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and Pinterest. So I think that's to me, those are all the good places because those are where I am.
There's no my such website thing as a good social media place.
I have a couple of favorites. I do play favorites with social media platforms. That's for sure. There's some good, I feel like there's some good people on the social medias. If you can find your right corner,
they're good. There's good people. They're just drowned out by everybody else's problem. And those people are the ones that get a much bigger platform. So that's what we deal with. Fun.
I mean, you have seen had the amount of content that I put out and the complete lack of virality of anything I've ever done. So yeah, I would love to have my videos have more reach, but
here's the thing. You give people decent, good advice about just like nutrient density and how to get things, but no, you just got to yell about how vegetables are terrible for you. That's how you go viral. That's the world
that's
we live
way.
In.
Yep.
And
the other way is, and I actually kind of want to do this, is organize everybody to share everybody's post to their stories, because I found that to be like the number one way, particularly on Instagram.
I'm in
Instagram. It's kind of on TikTok, but on Instagram, sharing to stories is a killer thing. Like Liam got big on Instagram conveniently the same time that me and Dr. Ids both shared his video.
Dr. Ids did a whole video on it specifically, and that's really what. And then it kind of took off after that.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Well, I'm in. So just let me know when the plan hits go.
And all our listeners out there, share our stuff to your stories.
Yeah,
it's one of the best ways you can
repost,
help.
That repost button, like, yeah.
Pretty much try anything at this point.
Yeah.
Yes, and then my website is Nutrivore.com. That's where there's tons of like deep dive articles about what nutrients do in the body and how they're linked with various health concerns, and then what foods have what nutrients. And I have a new book, Nutrivore, The Radical New Science for Getting the Nutrients You Need from the Foods You Eat, coming out May 14th, which is like now. So
when is this going to air? This will air on the 16th.
So it's out. Go get it.
It's out. Go get it.
It's available.
I already got a copy.
Yes. So you're good. You can still leave me a review on the places that have reviews though, Rob. And you just have to per FTC guidelines say I received an advanced copy
from the
publisher. I
mostly get to read it during camping season because then you sit around the fire and you just have a good book. And this looks like a good book.
Again, you're going to really enjoy the story about Lord Byron at the beginning of chapter one. and how he was the father of fad diets. He was the one who started all you have to do is this thing and then you'll lose weight.
Do you have a favorite fad diet before we go? Mine's the cookie diet, where you had the cookie that you drank with water and the cookie had something in it that would expand in your stomach. And then it filled up your stomach really big. And then you weren't hungry. That was my favorite. Because you got to eat cookies and lose weight. And that was their whole thing. And I was like, that's fucking genius. That's so smart.
So I think that because I have bought into so many fad diets over the years, I feel like my favorite fad diet is not fad diets. Like my favorite fad diet is like the Mediterranean diet because that's a real one with science. Do you know what I mean? Like I feel like I've bought into too many of them to be able to like have a tongue in cheek answer to that question. I think if I had a tongue in cheek answer to that question, it would sound very disingenuous.
My favorite fad diet is the raw chicken diet.
The raw chicken diet.
The raw chicken diet.
That's just rolling the dice for salmonella every single day.
Yeah. Fine. Exactly.
But you got to be primal like our ancestors. Okay, yeah. Dr. Sarah, I think everybody understands. Go get your Rockstar Zeros, grab that book, and don't be your worst.
Okay, Liam, okay, Liam, show us your improv skills. Player off here. Come on.
Player off? What are you?
Come on, sing.
Don't I have to do that like a visual thing? Nobody, everybody,
you gotta
anybody's
sing.
On
Come
YouTube.
On.
What? I don't know what you're saying. What's going
on? You got to sing a song.
Oh, am I supposed to do a song? Oh, shit.
Just make it up on the spot.
On the spot. Come on.
That is how.
I don't have improv skills. Dr. Sarah.
That's what makes it great.
She's the gal. She's the one that will make you all smile. I don't know how to rhyme. Enjoy your life. Damn, that didn't even rhyme. Fuck. I got nothing.
That was perfect. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Hey, wasn't that a great time? Listen to the podcast. You were just, I'm assuming you knew or you were just listening to in moderation. So if you go ahead and hit the five-star button, is that a thing? The like button?
That's a thing. No. Yep.
The like button five on stars. YouTube. If you're on YouTube, hit the like button. Not the dislike button. That's a bad button. The
bad
like
button.
Bad
don't
button.
Touch.
Hit all, so hit all the other buttons. The share, the you can go check out
all those things.
Subscribe. Go check out our Patreon. Yeah. We do have a Patreon. It's free to join if you want, or you could give us money. That'd be really cool. Like a dollar or two. It doesn't matter. Whatever you have.
That's where you'll find all the news for this.
We're super appreciative. You can find all sorts of other stuff there. We do giveaways, I think, sometimes. You know,
sometimes.
All that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So peace.